Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. We're glad you're here. We're here every Saturday morning right here on Atlanta's Biz 1190. We're streaming live on biz1190.com, and today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes, and we're glad you're here. We have a great guest today. Our guest is Kimberly Johnson. Kimberly is a very experienced realtor here in the Atlanta area. Been around this in business a long time. Kimberly, welcome to Driven to Business.
Well, thank you for having me here, Eddie. I'm excited about being here today.
Kimberly, I'm always interested in how people got in the business they're in. So tell us how you got to be a realtor.
Well, I bought my first house.
Well, there you go.
And I had been working in the medical field prior to that, and I bought my first house, and I was looking for a change. And the on-site agent, because I'd bought new construction, kept talking to me that she thought I would be an excellent realtor. And one thing led to another, and I took the class, passed the exam, and the rest is history, 14 years later.
Oh, 14 years. Good grief. That's a long, long time ago. You know, the Atlanta real estate market is an interesting market, as you know a lot better than me. I lived out in Texas in the mid to late 80s when oil, we think the oil prices have dropped now. Back then, they really dropped. It went down to $8 a barrel at one time. And I don't think all of us realized at that point how, at least I didn't, I was working for another guy out there. We didn't realize, I don't think, how dependent Houston, Texas was on the drilling business. And it's like the turn off the town overnight, and it's all of a sudden, the entire subdivisions are just sort of vacant with people. Houses getting taken over. If you remember, this is when a bunch of savings and loans collapsed and all that sort of thing.
Right.
So I moved here in 88 to Atlanta, and a few years later, the same thing happened here. Do you think it's me? I guess that's the...
No, I wouldn't say that. No, not at all.
Well, give us... What caused that?
You know, there were a couple of things. Of course, we've had two since you moved here to Atlanta, the most recent one.
Right.
I can't speak so much directly to the first one back in the 90s. I wasn't in real estate at that time. But typically when that happens, you're looking at a lot of different things coming together for the perfect storm.
Right.
A lot of times you've got federal regulations on banks that require them to lend to so many people. And so they loosen their guidelines.
Right.
And all of a sudden people who can no longer can't really afford to purchase start purchasing.
I mean, again, not being in a real estate business, that seems to me so obvious, but apparently to the federal government, that's not obvious.
I'd say you're correct.
Has the market, the market now in Atlanta, because you sort of hear mixed signals about that from people. I know the media, I looked up before I came into the studio today, the median, according to the website I looked on, the median price of a home in Atlanta, and I guess this is the whole area, it's around $206,000, which is give or take. Now, I know that's probably not true in the area you work in. Maybe actually a little higher than that. I don't know. But is the Atlanta market a good market? Is a buyer's market, a seller's market, or a combination? How do you see it?
The Atlanta market right now is strong for both buyers and sellers. When you talk about statistics for the metro Atlanta area, overall there are 16 metro counties that are taken into that figure. And over the last 2 years, the market has really gone up. The price in houses from December 2013 to December 14 rose 9%.
Wow, that's excellent.
So that's excellent, and it's a lot safer than the stock market right now.
Yes, yes, especially in the last few days. That's for sure. Well, are people are people in? You know, there was a time when I had a friend that was going around trying to buy some distressed properties, for lack of a better term.
Right,
and he did a little bit of that, but then he told me there got to be so much competition from that, even from way outside, some even foreign countries, coming here and buying up slugs. Is that still going on? Has that kind of worked its way out of the market? Is that going on?
Most of that has worked its way out of the market. There are still a few foreclosures, a few short sales that are happening, but those are much more difficult to find.
So this whole sort of game people were playing for a while, and I tried it. I never did well with it. I'm not sure the right term, but I would call it flipping houses, where you go and buy a house and you make it nice,
right,
and flip it quickly and sell it. Is that still a viable business, or is that harder than it was?
It's still viable, and the main reason is a few years ago when people were finding these great deals, going in and putting some money into renovating maybe the kitchen or flooring,
right.
The houses looked great, but the buyers couldn't get qualified because all of a sudden the banks were afraid to loan money. And what's changed is that the banks have stabled themselves.
Right.
Gotten rid of a lot of the inventory they had on their books, so they're healthier, and therefore they're lending money a little bit easier. Not that it's super easy, but it is easier now than it was, say, in 2009.
Right.
So those investors who are going in have a bigger pool of buyers to advertise to.
You know, I don't think I realize, and I don't think a lot of other people realize, I, for sure I know that I didn't realize it. When the last couple of little real estate downturns, I don't think I understood how dependent the Atlanta economy is on real estate. But it really is. I mean, we are really married to it, aren't we?
We are. We are. And that explains a lot of the growth we've had
right.
just in the last, you know, 15, 20 years has been exponential here in Atlanta. And, you know, it's helped with bringing businesses in as well. There are a lot of relocating businesses to the Atlanta
right.
market. You know, right now State Farm's relocating.
Exactly.
And so you've got a lot of buyers coming in looking for what? Housing.
Right. You wouldn't know this, but our company, EMA, for a while, we had an office in Southern California, in Orange County. And I would be astonished going out there at what our employees, I'd go home with them, and they would tell me what they pay for their houses. And I was just flabbergasted, like, you're kidding. You paid that. I mean, I'm not criticizing their house. I'm just saying this house would be half that in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
So I think somebody coming from there to here gets a really good deal.
It is, but it also depends on how their income is being affected with that move as well.
True. That's true.
That could be changing some. And it's all, you know, when you hear the news talk about the real estate market, it's hard to take the entire United States
yes.
into one, you know, two-sentence summary.
I have thought of that a lot, too. Real estate is ultimately local.
Yes.
And honestly, it's like a lot of things. It comes down to what the person wanting to buy is willing to pay, and what the person willing to sell is willing. That's honestly what it comes down to, and that's a big deal. I think I told you before we went on the air that a few years ago, for reasons that are unclear to me, frankly, my wife and I decided we would sell our house and move further out. I don't know why we were going to do that. It just seemed like everybody was doing it, so we should do it. And so, you know, so I had a friend of mine as an agent come by, and he was a nice guy, and he looked around the house and said, you really, to sell your house, you need to do some updates to your house. You need to do this in the kitchen, the bathroom,
right.
you know, this, that, and the other. And it needs to be modernized, appliances, and so forth. So we did all that, and we did spend a little money getting that done. And then my wife said, you know, I really like this house. And so so we're still there. Does that happen to you?
That does happen occasionally. You know, when you've been in a house for a while and you're used to the same appliances in the same kitchen and the same bathroom style, and then you come in and you totally renovate it, all of a sudden it's a brand new house to you. And it's really hard for, you know, especially a wife to give that up if she's renovated it to the perfect, quote unquote,
right,
kitchen.
Exactly, yeah. I was going to ask you a little later about this, and we'll talk more about it, but, you know, it's my opinion, very uninformed compared to you, that residential properties are driven by women. Is that correct?
I would say yes, definitely. The woman sees herself living throughout the entire house.
Yes, yes. Because we've looked at a house before, and I would really like it, and Vicki would say, but look where the laundry room is. And like, who cares where the laundry room is? I said, well, I do. Because you're going to have to walk a long ways with this stuff, and I never even thought of that. So, wow. Okay, so I guess you, I think guys tend to look at the value of a house, the structure of it, and maybe where it is, and say, you know, this is a good neighborhood here. And
I think men tend to look at the bottom line.
Right.
What's this going to cost me each month? And
right.
where's my TV going to go?
Right.
And how big of a TV can I purchase?
The important stuff.
To put on that wall.
Yeah. Hey, what are interest rates these days? If you're going out to get a mortgage right now, where are they?
They're at 3.75.
Holy cow, really?
3.75 to 4. So, of course, they're always fluctuating,
yeah.
but they're excellent right now.
You see it going up?
Potentially a little bit, but here in the near future, rates are going to stay low.
Right. You know, we refinanced ours, and this is a great surprise to me. Several years ago, back when we were going to sell the house, mm-hmm. I refinanced it with an ARM, which I didn't have. And so, which scared me to death, because in the past, I'd always thought, well, you're going to get done with an ARM, you know, because I came up in the era of increasing interest rates. So you get a low interest rate now, we're not going to be able to a couple of years, so it doesn't matter. You know, we'll be out and gone.
Right.
Well, that didn't happen. And to my utter surprise, when that loan came due, I'd already been looking around nervous about it. They went down. And they've gone down a little bit every year just about since then. And we're now paying pretty much nothing. I mean, and honestly, we don't owe that much on a house. And I've thought about paying it off a few times, but it's like free money. So it's like,
And that's the perfect scenario, because not everybody who had an arm ended up paying a lot more, like you just said. There were a lot of people who got the arm at the correct time, and rates have gone down since then. And that's always a bonus, because you can apply the extra money towards the principal.
Wouldn't it be, though, in today's world, I mean, with the interest rates where they are so historically low, that perhaps an arm may not be a great idea because they're already pretty low?
Right. Well, and what I tell my buyers whenever we're working, the first thing I do is get them pre-qualified with one of my preferred lenders.
Right.
Because I need to know exactly what price point we're looking at before I start searching.
Right.
And then they have to feel comfortable with that payment.
Right.
And it's different if you're a first-time buyer versus this is your, you know, 10th or 11th house. And so making sure they feel comfortable with that payment and where that's going to be for the next 30 years, the next 15 years, or in the place of an adjustable, the next 5 years. And I let the lender and the buyer work that out.
Right. You know, when we bought our first house, I was 24 years old over in Alabama. I remember, I'm a lot older than you, Kimberly, but it was this, we paid $21,500 for the house. And I remember thinking, how on earth will we ever pay, I think the payment was $180 a month or something. I was like, how will we ever make this payment? You know, it's just insane. Kim, I'm glad you're here. Hope you can stick around for the rest of the program. I want to talk to you in a little bit about your business in particular, and let's talk about, I want to talk about a little more generic business sense, the sort of the customer service, I would call it, aspect of what you do. I don't know that people define a real estate agent in terms of customer service, although that's the way I would put it, but you know, they just like, she called me back, she answered my questions, she did a good job. All those kinds of things, like it's your take on that for folks that are not only in real estate but are in other businesses, because we talk about that a lot on here, on the program. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're here every Saturday, as I reminded you, on WAFS Atlanta's Biz 1190. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. We're talking with Kimberly Johnson here in the Atlanta real estate area. Kimberly has a lot of experience in that. We're glad to have her here. I want to talk to you, Kimberly, a little bit about, let's first of all just talk about your business. Tell us, you know, you hear the elevator pitch thing. This can be a little longer than an elevator pitch, but why should people call Kimberly Johnson for their real estate needs?
Well, when you start thinking about purchasing or selling a home, it can become a challenging process. You've heard stories from friends and family members of how stressful the process was and maybe a horror story or two. Well, that's where I come in. I am a realtor, and I turn all the details and confusion of searching, purchasing, and selling a home into an organized and smooth process that completely satisfies the client's needs. Whether you're a first-time buyer, you're buying your 10th house, you're looking for new construction, you're downsizing because you're an empty nester, you're looking for a home with a big yard or a townhome with low maintenance, my job is to take the pressure off of you so you can make clear and concise decisions throughout the process. I am honest, and sometimes I tell my clients things they may not want to hear. I take my experience and my knowledge and make the buying or selling experience positive and seamless.
How can people reach you? How should they get a hold of you if people are listening?
Email. That's the best way.
Okay.
It's kjohnson, K-J-O-H-N-S-O-N, at builtbyfortress.com.
And by the way, Kimberly's contact information will be on eddiemayfield.com. You can go there, hit the blog page, and you'll see a little blurb on her and a little bio on her and also contact information. So go there and check that out. You know, one of the I have a son that just went through this with a realtor, so I can kind of speak to it. They were not real happy with one of the things, you know. I think when you're not in the real estate business, you know, you're in it all the time, but, you know, most of us, when we get ready to sell houses, we're not in that business. We don't know that business. We expect you to.
Right.
But, you know, when you don't hear from your agent, you know, that you had the house on the market for a couple of weeks and you haven't heard a word, you have no idea what's going on. Maybe a lot's going on, but you don't know. You try to call the agent. They don't return your calls. That's a frustrating thing. I'm sure you don't do that, but I think you can understand how that drives people nuts.
It does, and I think it goes a lot to, especially in selling a house, setting the expectations up front with that seller. What services I'm going to provide, how often I'm going to be touching base with you. Even if it's just a quick email to say, hey, I had four agents call about your house, and we have two showings next week. That just gives that seller some comfort that something is happening.
Right.
If I do an email blast out to, you know, the Metro Atlanta realtors, you know, copying the seller in on that so they can see that email blast that's gone out. And I think when you're looking, you know, to sell a house, it's a little different than buying.
Right.
Because you can't expect in this market to sell your house within 2 days.
Right.
It does happen, but it is very rare still.
I know this is an impossible question. I know the median here would be all over the place, but depending on what the neighborhood and this, that, and the other. But right. I mean, is there a sort of generic thing you could go by in terms of how much time to sell a house?
I would say 45 to 60 days is kind of typical right now in this market. And again, it depends on where you're selling and the type of home that you're selling as well.
Right.
Right now, we have a lot more detached product out there in the inventory than single family, we have attached product. We have a lot more attached houses, townhomes and condos available than we do single family homes.
Yeah.
So that's a
change here in the Atlanta area? I'm older than you, but that's probably not something I would look for. So is that a change in the demographic in this area?
I think it is. A lot of your, you know, mid-20s,
right,
they're looking for a townhome. You know, they've got that first job, maybe the second job. They've had a promotion.
They don't want to have a yard.
They're doing well, but they don't want to take care of a yard.
Right, right.
So they're looking for that townhome or that condo, and those are typically built closer in to the city as well.
One of my neighbors told me the only thing he wants to do in his yard is to walk through it and get in his car. He said, that is all I want to do in my yard. I'm not a lot better than that, to be perfectly frank about it. You know, when I bought a house 25 years ago, our house here back in, and it's hard to think how much the world has changed in terms of technology. I know you guys are at the forefront of that. But, you know, when we did that, we had an agent who had one of these big, thick MLS books, and we're sitting down, you know, she had marked with a marker, and printed out some stuff for us too.
Right.
Copied probably. And, you know, when we're looking around, you don't do that anymore, do you?
No. No, thank goodness. The Atlanta area is way too big to carry a book around with 33,000 listings in it. Right now with the technology, there's an abundance of information available for everyone, not just realtors. And so it makes the process a little bit easier because buyers can look at a certain area and they can see what's there. And it can help them narrow the process down a little bit. And one of the details that I always talk about with the buyer is what type of home they're looking for.
Right.
You know, and to be realistic about that. And once they start searching online, it can turn into a double-edged sword for them.
Right.
Because once we start working together, I try to limit they're searching online because they could be looking at listings. Not a lot of the websites stay updated. And so they could find five houses they love, and those all closed 3 months ago.
Yeah. We interviewed a doctor here. I think I did. We've interviewed several of them. But one of them told me one time that, you know, he's all about people going online and looking up their ailment. Mm-hmm. He said, however, some people bring in, you know, 50 pages of printed material that he's never been in this business before, you know, and it's some real wacko stuff so that we really don't want to go down that road there. You know, that's never worked.
And also with all the do-it-yourself and the real estate shows on TV, especially for first-time buyers, it can be a little misleading. They think that they're going to find that perfect fixer-upper and it's going to cost nothing to fix it up.
Right.
And they forget about the loan and the appraisal process.
Well, let's talk about that. I know my friends in real estate agents, they don't particularly like for sale by owner things. Mm-hmm. And they're, I mean, you know, I think you could make a bit of an argument either way, but the real estate agent, it's a complex situation to sell by yourself. You're probably going to deal with an agent anyway when it's all said and done, aren't you?
Typically you are, because even if I have a buyer that I'm working with and they're out looking on their own, maybe on a Sunday afternoon after lunch, they're driving around and they see something, they're going to call me with that address. They're going to call me with the information.
Right.
And that allows me to do a little bit of research, you know, into it. And then I can always contact the buyer and see if they're willing to pay a commission or co-op with me.
How do people, just in general, you know, as you've mentioned several times, we're a large metro area here.
Yes.
A very large metro area. How do people find a real estate agent? How do they find you? How do customers find you?
Well, there's a couple different ways. The number one is referrals.
Okay.
You know, people usually ask their coworkers, their family, their friends, you know, people they go to church with, hey, do you know any real estate agents? And so that's always the best way to to find a new client is from a referral, because there's that trust factor already built in.
Yep.
You know, they worked with mom and dad, so they're going to do a good job for me. They worked for my friends Sue and John, and, you know, she loved the realtor, so they're going to do a great job for me.
We've talked on this program a number of times that from all the, despite all of the plethora of advertising and communication abilities we have these days, you know, we're all walking around with cell phones connected to the internet. We can beep each other at any time. You know,
right.
Information is just pretty much, you can drown yourself in information. But there's been several authors, among them an author I like a lot named Malcolm Gladwell, who talked about the fact that we have really, what that has done is force us to re-enter the age of word of mouth, because none of us trust any of this stuff we see online. There's so much of it, and we built pretty severe filters for this. Like, I'm not buying any of that. You know, I don't buy that story.
Well, real estate's a person-to-person business. I think
right.
It will always be.
Right.
Because you need someone's opinion, you know, to help you make a decision. I end up being a counselor in a lot of situations
right.
to couples who are looking to buy. And you need that interaction.
Right. In about a minute here, what's the biggest no-no? And maybe we'll have to continue past the break. What's the biggest no-no in selling your house? If you saw a guy doing it, you'd say, no, don't do that.
Well, the biggest no-no I would say is not picking up your house.
Ah, yes.
Not keeping it clean.
Yes.
Keeping too many personal effects around.
Right.
Because that can be a real turnoff. Someone walks in and there's a pile of dirty laundry on the floor in the bedroom. They walk in and they see, you know, 10,000 pictures of you, your dog, your family, your ancestors, and
right.
that's immediately going to set them in that they are.
And what them to do is visualizing themselves.
Exactly.
In that house,
exactly. You want to minimize all of that.
Exactly. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're talking with Kimberly Johnson. More to come. Stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. Talking with Kimberly Johnson about real estate and about business in general. Kimberly, right before the break, we were talking about some no-nos about, and you're mainly talking about how to deal with customers about people leaving, you just say it's leaving their underwear on the floor and so forth, which is not the greatest idea when you're trying to sell a house. You know, customers now, at least in my opinion, if they're not more demanding, they are certainly more informed. I mean, all of us these days can go online and look up anybody and anything. And, you know, I'll notice even in church, a pastor will give some example, and you see people they're pulling up their phones, checking that out. I've kidded our pastor. You better be careful about that. They're going to check you out on this. But how does that affect your business?
You know, it affects mine a little bit. I work mainly for a builder.
Right.
And so I'm on site with new construction a lot, although I do work with buyers and sellers outside as
right.
well. And so when they come in, they can see the information that I have about myself there in the sales center, as well as the builder and the community. And I think that gives a little bit of a comfort level. I'm very honest with the clients right up front. I try
right.
to answer every question possible that they may ask about a product or a home or a location. And I think that... that's really the most important thing. If you can make the client feel comfortable with who you are, you know,
right.
as a realtor, and your honesty, that goes a long way. I've had several clients. One just recently came into the new neighborhood and turned out the product that I was selling was not really what she was looking for, but she came back a week and a half later, said she'd interviewed three realtors that people had referred to her, and she didn't feel comfortable with any of them. And could I represent her outside, helping her find something?
Well, that just reiterates what we've been talking about. It is the relationship thing. And I think people forget that even in this high-tech age, it still is relationship. That's what drives things. One of the problems, I got a couple of friends own restaurants, and one of the problems they get into now is that, you know, they'll have a diner come in and have a bad experience. Well, he immediately goes to Yelp and puts that everywhere of what a crummy restaurant this is. And then the next guy going in looks and says, well, I'm not going in there. They said the place is dirty. You know, and the guy could be lying about this. It could be a competitor. Does that happen in real estate business? Do real estate agents get bad mouthed online or lauded online, as the case may be?
Not so much online that I've seen, But I think what happens is word of mouth. Atlanta is right. still a small town when right. it comes to real estate.
Right.
You run across people that you sell homes to, especially during the Christmas season at the mall. I always run into a half a dozen people I sold houses to maybe
right.
10 years ago.
Right.
And realtors get to know each other through transactions in that process as well. And again, your reputation is everything in this business. And so that's really important. With most of those websites, though, that do allow feedback,
right.
Trulia is one of them that you can get feedback on for a realtor that you've had experiences with.
Right. What's it called?
Trulia.
Trulia, okay.
They typically allow you to respond as well.
Right.
I know
right.
Yelp and a lot of those allow the
they do.
The owner to respond.
You know what's interesting? I call that the eBay effect because I think, I could be wrong, because I think the first people that did that was eBay. Back when, you know, I buy a lot on eBay personally, and our company buys and sells on eBay. Almost all
right.
companies do these days.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, eBay's sort of self-policing. You do not, if you're selling something on eBay, you do not want a bad mark next to your name. And if you get one, you're going to go deal with that. Now, if the guy's unreasonable, eBay has a way for you to go and say, exactly tell your story. You know, this guy wanted an overnight shipment, and it clearly states that you pay extra for that, and he didn't pay extra, and he got mad because of an overnight shipment. But if you look at my listing, that's what it said. You know, you defend yourself.
Right.
Basically.
Right.
To somebody, because some people, but by and large, you know, if I'm scooting through there looking at things and I see a guy's got a low rating, there's no way in the world I'm buying from that guy. I mean, you can't see the product. You don't really have a relationship with the guy. All you've got is his online relationship there. So I just think that has affected us.
It has. And I think, like you said, it comes back around to it being a person
right.
business.
Right. You know, there's a truism, I think, that every successful salesperson knows in every field, and that is that generally, and I think it applies to selling houses, too, or buying houses, is that people do like to buy. If you're looking for a house, you do want to buy a house, but you don't want to be sold
right.
a house.
Exactly.
Talk to us about that from your perspective.
Well, I think the most important thing first is to find out what this person is actually looking for and why they want to buy a house. Those are the two most important things to find out from a buyer who's looking to purchase, and I have to go to work meeting those needs. Now, sometimes you have to have a readjustment when you get into the search because they thought they were going to get $1 million house for $200,000.
Right.
And you have to bring them back down to reality.
Let's get real.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I have to show them, when I do find the properties that really do match those needs, how those marry together, you know, to make the perfect home for this family. And sometimes during that process, you know, the wife is saying one thing, the husband's saying something else. You find that property that has everything in it, and then they don't agree on it.
Right.
And then you have to come in as the counselor and find out, okay, now you said you wanted A, B, and C. This house has that.
What's wrong with it?
Yeah,
exactly, yeah.
You know, what are you really looking for?
You know, dealing with people, as you well know, almost all customer service truisms and rules and so forth, they all assume that you're dealing in good faith with somebody. And
right.
also, if you and I are doing a deal, and your assumption is I'm dealing in good faith, and my assumption is you're dealing in good faith, if either one of us suspects somewhere around along the way that the other one's not dealing in good faith, at least for my part, I'm going to back out. I'm just going to back away from it. And I would expect you're the same way. But, you know, you do have customers sometimes that are not dealing with you in good faith. And you have to, figure that out, at least in our business, you have to figure that out. This guy is not dealing with us in good faith. And we have to call them on that sometimes.
You do. We recently had a listing that happened to. Went under contract. Everything was being checked off by the potential buyer. The home inspection came back with her, you know, one or two minor things. The appraisal came in. Everything looked good. And before the 10 days of due diligence expired, the night before, he decided to cancel.
Yeah.
And, you know, I put on the counselor hat. And I'm trying to figure out, you know, what's the problem? What are the issues here? Trying to solve that, you know, for my seller and to save the deal. And I just knew 5 minutes into a 30-minute conversation that this person was not being honest with me. And so, you know, I just said, well, you know, hope you find what you're looking for. And then we relisted it and had it under contract 2 weeks later.
You know, for many people, buying a house is the biggest financial decision they will ever make on a personal level.
It is.
And it may well be that they end up with some buyer's hesitation, you know, like, oh my goodness, I'm about to sign. I hope I'm not making a mistake. And I think you've got part of your job probably is to make them feel a little better about this. Look, this is a good deal. And And we've been through all this, and you talk to us about that a little bit.
Right. You have to help them see the whole picture.
Right.
And that goes to, first of all, why they are buying and what they're looking for. If it's a single person, 27 years old, who travels 3 weeks out of every month, they don't need a big house with a big yard.
Right.
You know, they need something that's going to be real low maintenance for them, a condo or a townhome, something that's taken care of. So you have to look at that big picture and discuss the responsibility of, you know, what this entails with purchasing this home. It is an investment, and you want to take care of it. And, you know, finding out which product is perfect for them. And then going down to how much are they paying right now for their rent.
Right.
Because if they're paying, you know, $1,100 a month in rent, they're going to feel comfortable around that price point.
Right, right.
And that, you know, you go to the lender and find out what they're qualified for. And then you talk about that payment. Okay, you might be qualified for $350,000, but do you really want that payment? Right. At $350,000.
You know, I told you about when my wife and I first bought our house back when I was in my mid-20s over in Alabama. And there was an older gentleman. He was a friend of my mom and dad's. So mm-hmm. I ended up with him. And when he noticed how nervous I was, I never bought a house before or right. anything even like a house before. And it was an older house in an older neighborhood, needed a lot of work. And I'm just not seeing this picture. And he said, Eddie, this is a really good deal. This is a changing and booming neighborhood. There's a lot of people moving in here. This is going to be a good investment. And he just kind of gave me some comfort with it.
Right.
And we went and did it. You know, that's the most money I've ever made off a house. We sold that 3 years later, double what we paid for it. Now, that was back in the 70s when that was going on.
Right.
Of course, we also paid that comparable amount to get another house. So it's like, you know, I don't know that reworked it all that well. But nonetheless, that I think a lot of people like to see that these days, where you could do that kind of a. But I think it is the idea. And, you know, another thing you're saying that I was thinking about, I don't know if you ever read a book. There's a guy named Daniel Pink wrote a book called To Sell as Human. I just finished reading it.
No.
He talks in there. It's a lot of sort of psychology of sales. But he talks in there about the idea that one way you build credibility with a person, you need to, he's not saying fake anybody off. He means be credible.
Right.
But if you tell somebody the negatives about something as well, if you're honest and say, okay, this is a good deal because this, and this, but now here's the negative about that. And if you give them the negative, they are more likely to buy from you statistically than had you not put that negative in there, because that's a big credibility builder in their mind. You went up in credibility in their mind. The fact that, okay, this person's honest with me. You know?
Exactly. That happens a lot when I'm working with buyers and they're looking for an older home.
Right.
You know, if the house is 18 years old, you may need a new roof within the next
right.
5 years.
Right.
And that's going to cost
you may need new air conditioning or
quite a bit of money.
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, and that's where, you know, looking at the systems in the house, you know, have they been updated? Have
right.
they been renovated? Or is
right.
this house original, 20 years old, everything?
Right.
And being honest with them, you know, I know you love the house. I know it's in the perfect location. We've got the great price. But do you have enough funds set aside to, you know, replace the water heater, spend $1,000
right.
on that, spend a couple of thousand on a new AC unit?
Right.
And if they have that, if they've planned for it, that's great. And they do appreciate you pointing that out to them.
Are you going to like taking baths and not showers? I
mean, right.
You need to decide this right now. You know, that's,
exactly.
That's your plan. Yeah, no, we bought that first old house. I never heard the term flip a house. I never heard of it. We didn't buy it to do anything. But this is back when I was a lot more able than smart. And so I did most of the work myself in there, not having to do what I was doing half the time. But, you know, we did turn, we fixed it up nice. It's an older, mm-hmm. older, and it still to this day is in a very, very, very nice area of Birmingham where a lot of millennials are moving to and living, a very sort of upgrade
right.
area. But again, when I moved there, I would never in a million years have bought that house. That realtor's guy told me it's a good place to buy a house. I would never have done that.
Well, and that goes into finding a realtor who's familiar with the area.
Right. Exactly.
You know, I work mostly on the North Metro side of Atlanta.
Right.
So if I had somebody who wanted to buy down in, you know, Clinton County, Henry County,
right.
I would refer them out because I'm right. not familiar with that area. And so knowing the areas and also working with new construction a lot, knowing what's coming up, you know, in the areas,
right.
what new neighborhoods are planned, and, you know, is really helpful too when a buyer is wondering, okay, what's in the area, what's coming in the area.
Right. Right. You know, and that is interesting to like stay on top of even what business changes are taking place. There may be, if there's some large company moving in there,
right.
it's going to be bringing a bunch of employees. You might be in a really good appreciating area of a
exactly.
house. If you know that, you can really do the guy some friend. You're listening to Driven to Business. One more segment to come. We're talking with Kimberly Johnson. You can find her by email at kjohnson@builtbyfortress.com. I'm Eddie Mayfield, back in just a moment. Welcome back to the final segment of Driven to Business for today. We're talking with Kimberly Johnson. By the way, you can get in touch with Kimberly at K Johnson. That's K-J-O-H-N-S-O-N. K Johnson at builtbyfortress.com. Also, her contact information will be on eddiemayfield.com. Today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com following the live broadcast and also on iTunes. So check us out there. Kimberly, the real estate business is a little different than some businesses. You know, many of people work for a company, and, you know, that company really is who they work for, sets all the times. You know, basically you're doing a job for the company.
Right.
But it seems to me that real estate people are really all independent contractors, really.
We are. And that's why it takes someone who has some skills, organization, and time management to be a realtor, because you have to keep your own schedule. You have to, you know, make sure you get up, make sure you start work, you know, 9 o'clock every morning, and you work through the day.
So if you're part of a brokerage firm, what do they do?
Well, they oversee a lot of the E&O insurance, and they're there to back you up if you have questions on negotiating, on pricing a property. My broker might know a little bit more information than I do. And so they're there to help you with that. For me, they do all my marketing.
Okay.
You know, they do my collateral, my flyers, my signage.
Are they paid a piece of percentage, or do you pay a monthly fee for that, or how does that work? It vary?
Well, it varies from office to office. Okay. But it's usually a percentage.
For someone listening who wants to get in the real estate business after hearing you talk, what should they do?
Well, I would say they have to work on their people skills first.
Yeah.
If you don't like working with people, you don't want to go into this business. And they have
to. You say that. I find that so funny that though somebody will say, I want to be in sales because they see the money. They won't speak to anybody anywhere. It's like, don't you understand sales? You've got to talk to some people. I mean, you've got to talk to them. You can't just sit in the corner by yourself. That's not what salespeople do.
Right. And you can make excellent money in real estate, but if that's the number one goal, you're going to run over a lot of people in the process
and
not have a good reputation.
Right.
And so you have to care about the people. And then you have to be a problem solver.
Right.
You know, you have to be the counselor. You have to be the advisor. You have to be the financial advisor as well sometimes. And so I think having those sets of skills puts you in a good path. And then, of course, you can go and take the real estate school.
Right. And you have to do that because you got to be licensed.
You have to be licensed, yes.
Right. Is that a long, how long is that process? Does that take a long time?
It depends. You can go straight through each day. It takes about 6 weeks, or you can do a night, twice a night.
Okay. You know, I think it's Zig Ziglar that said, I'm not sure about this, but I think it sounds like him. He said that, you know, sales is the lowest paying easy work there is, and the best paying hard work there is.
I would agree
with
that. Yes, definitely. In this business, the harder you work, the more you're going to make.
Or, I think it's a golfer, Gary Player, was famous for saying, it seems the harder I work, the luckier I get. Or the more I practice, the luckier I get. Somehow was what he was talking about. What's the most rewarding part of your job? What do you like the best about it?
I think seeing at the closing table that person, that couple, that family who's purchasing that house, signing it, and then the relief after everything is done and they have the keys in their hand, this is our house. And so seeing that ownership, there's nothing quite like it.
Right.
And then usually, being invited back to the house after they've moved in and seeing how they've changed it, how they've painted, how they've decorated, how they've made that house their home.
Are most, I should have asked this earlier, are most of the homes you sell new construction or existing? Is it a mix?
I would say it's probably 75% new construction.
Okay.
And 25%.
So the new construction people get a little more say so and like, okay, we want this appliance. We want, and you pay for it, I know. We want.
Depending on what, if they come in at dirt
as
a true pre-sale, then yes, you get to pick your flooring, your appliances, your cabinet color, everything.
I've never done that. I've always wanted to, but I always wondered if my wife and I would ever agree on things, so I'm not sure. It's not that I'm hard to get along with. She listens to the program. I better watch myself. She actually has a lot better idea about things like that than I do as far as colors and so forth. If you can tell us without getting anybody in any trouble, what's the most tedious or frustrating part of your job, the part you really don't like, or you find most frustrating at least?
I would say dealing with a buyer who has the wrong expectations.
Okay.
And coupling with that, the young couple who brings the parents, the aunts, the uncles, and everybody else involved.
Right.
And that can get, a little tedious at times. Not wanting to step on anybody's toes, of course, and, mom and dad's opinions are valuable, but depending on how it goes, sometimes you have to sit down, and this is where being honest with your client.
Right. I can see that.
They don't want to hear it sometimes.
Yes, I can see that.
You know, are mom and dad buying the house for you? No. Are mom and dad giving you 20% to put down? No. Who's living in the house? Well, we're going to be living in the house. Okay. It's nice to have their opinion.
Right.
But you guys really like this house. This house works for you.
I think young couples, as crazy as it sounds, I think they want their parents' approval.
Yes.
Generally. So yes. I think that has a lot to do with it. But you're right. I can see where that would get really annoying. If you know, you sold them, you got everything, and then mom comes in and says, well, but I really don't like, we just went over this.
Well, quick story. I had a buyer, this is several years ago. She had new construction, picked everything out. The mother and dad fly in 2 weeks before closing. The mother does not like the color of the hardwood.
A little late.
And, yes, the house is completed.
Yeah.
The mother made such a stink about it that she gave the daughter $8,000 to have the builder rip up the hardwoods and replace it 2 weeks before closing. And a month after closing, she called me, the buyer did, and she said, you know, I hate this color of hardwood. I should have stuck with what I had. And all the conversations I had with her, she was going to, well, mother said, and I need to do, and she's going to pay for it. So sometimes, you know, it works out. Sometimes it doesn't.
This may fall into that category. I always like to ask people the business, because all of us are probably a little surprised in business. We get into something, we're like, good grief. Did you have those good grief moments? Is there anything really surprised you about the real estate business when you got into it?
It is, because you get to know people on a different level. You're on a business platform here.
Right.
But then you kind of become friends throughout the process. And people will disclose things to you that sometimes they shouldn't disclose.
Right.
That are a little shocking, and it's interesting. And you want to like each other. You know, you have to like each other to work together. Doesn't mean you're going to be best friends after the deal is finished. But I would say sometimes the things that people disclose can be a little shocking.
You know, and you may be about like my wife, Vicki. People will tell my wife, Vicki, things. I'm like, why on earth would they tell you that? I would never tell about that. And, you know, it's like, well, did you ask them about that? I said, no. She's just one of those kind of people just tell things to. It's like, why in the world?
And that may be me, too. I may be in that category.
Are. You probably are. Yeah, getting that. Well, what's the future going to look like for real estate? I mean, you have any feelings about that? I mean, are we going to – maybe that's an unfair question, even, but are there any major changes you think is going to happen in real estate where we're doing it?
I don't see anything in the near future. I think the real estate market here in Atlanta, speaking specifically to Atlanta,
right,
is geared up for a phenomenal spring.
Yes.
Our company has executed one contract just about every day in the month of January.
Wow.
So sales have started out very quick this year. And so I think that the market here is going to be an excellent year. And that's what I'm hearing from lenders, from other realtors that I'm friends with and I speak to on a regular basis as well,
right,
is that 2015 is going to be the best of the last, you know, 7 or 8 years.
Our business is a member of the National Federation of Independent Business, and we've actually interviewed their Georgia director on here. But, you know, one of the things about Georgia, that Georgia has a business-friendly legislature.
Yes.
And a business-friendly governor. And a lot of what drives real estate is people want to move here, and you know, you're moving out of these incredibly overtaxed areas with bad weather, and you come here to Atlanta. It's nice weather most of the time. Not so great today, but most of the time it's nice weather, and we have good housing values, excellent housing values down here.
We really do, and even during the downturn, we bounced back, I think, you know, relatively quickly.
Yeah, I think compared to a lot of people,
to a lot of other
areas, we certainly did. Yeah, and.
Yes.
I think Houston is, having lived in Houston 10 years, I don't know what's going to happen there, but I think they're going back into it. Kimberly, you've been a great guest. Thanks for coming on Driven to Business.
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
Remind you, reach Kimberly at kjohnson@builtbyfortress.com or find her contact information on eddiemayfield.com. We'll see you again next week. This is Eddie Mayfield. You're listening to Driven to Business.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.